Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, and welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday. My co-host.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
Fred, it's so great to have you, and you're the webmaster for the esteemed Creation Research Society. And on today's program, we're going to spend the whole time talking about the evolution and origin of what?
Of languages.
Languages. That's going to be fun. Human languages. Where do they come from? And the story really is a great boost to the theory of evolution, no? Isn't there a lot of evidence that languages evolved?
That languages evolved? Well, I guess we'll take a look at that, Bob.
What do you think? It's overwhelming evidence for the truth, the veracity of the story of the Bible.
Absolutely.
The history of the Bible. So we'll look at that. But first, let me remind the audience, February is our annual BEL telethon to help us stay on the air broadcasting through 2009. And if you could please help out, a gift of $50 to Bob and Yurt Live, any two Bible study albums, and you save $20 because they're normally $35 each. A gift of $100 to Bob and Yurt Live, our goal is $20,000. So a gift of $100 would help so much. That's one half of 1%. Fred, I went to public school, but I still think I figured that out. One half of 1%, $100, and any four BEL resources, including The Plot, which is my life's work, a book, 300 pages, an overview of the whole Bible. So any four BEL resources, you could save $50 with a gift of $100. And if you sign up to one of our monthly subscriptions, you get the second month free if you sign up during the telethon. So please help us. 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. Fred, it's the fall issue, 2008, of the publication of the organization you're a member of, Creation Research Society Quarterly. And what an article by Jerry Bergman on the evolution and origin of human language. And what Jerry does is he points out that when you compare ancient languages with modern languages, you find out that the primitive languages, that they're not primitive. And in some ways, they're more complex in grammar and syntax and the ability to express ideas.
We know a lot of these ancient languages in a fair amount of detail, Bob.
We do know them, right? People think we don't know anything about maybe these early languages, but we know them well.
And there's things like the Rosetta Stone that's enlightened a lot of our understanding of hieroglyphics and languages.
That's right. We were unable to break hieroglyphics. Linguists couldn't read it, not even Egyptians. They went from hieroglyphics to a language, and after they did that, they forgot how to read hieroglyphics. And so thanks to the Rosetta Stone, which had a lot of text in three different translations, right?
Well, there was Egyptian, wasn't there, and something called Demotic?
Well, that's right. That was like the Egyptian language not in hieroglyphics.
Okay.
And then there was hieroglyphics, and then there was Greek. And so with those three languages, and of course we still knew Greek, they were able to understand, to comprehend, to crack the code of hieroglyphics.
That's right.
What a great time in the study of human history.
And just in context, it mentions this later in the article, there's over 7,000 languages, known languages.
7,000 known languages that seem to have come from just originally. You recall about how many? About 100 original languages that have been identified. And they are so sophisticated that you would think it would take millennia for them to evolve, but they all appear out of nowhere.
Yeah, how does evolution explain the origin of languages? And that's what this article deals with.
Yeah. So, Fred, let's, with thanks and kudos to Jerry Bergman, who's a brilliant scientist in his own right, let's go through this article and share with the audience Jerry's presentation. For example, starting with Darwin's idea was that language evolved from grunts to modern language. And it turns out there's no evidence for that theory. Rather, as far back as we can look, language has always been highly complex with grammar and syntax and vocabulary all the way back.
That's right. As we go through time, if anything, language becomes less sophisticated, a little more simple. You know, men in general, we're in general lazy. We like to take shortcuts and whatnot. And if anything, our study of this topic has shown that languages, if anything, have de-evolved. They seem to be maybe less complex. Now, the lexicon might grow. You'll have more words like email and internet that get added to a language.
Right.
But the amount of verb tenses and this and that, a lot of that tends to be forgotten.
The sophistication, right, the tense, the temporal information in a verb tense, even the mood, whether a verb is an indicative, a subjunctive, contrary to fact. Like people who spoke English, they might say, if I were king, I would lower the tax rate. But nowadays, people don't know the subjunctive. They don't know how to say, if I were king. They say, if I was king. And I say, when you were 20? I say, what do you mean? No, I'm saying, if I was king, when you were in your 30s? What do you mean, if I was king? What are you talking about? If I were king. But that kind of information, for example, in the Greek language, it's just so sophisticated, and we tend to devolve.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago that I saw an original copy, not an authentic original, but original text copy of the King James Bible. And boy, it's difficult to understand. I'm not talking about the King James as it is presented to us today. I'm talking about a King James version where you have to be a real language expert to understand it.
Yeah.
Too bad for the King James only, if that were true, I guess too bad for us, let alone others.
Right. I have a photocopy version of the 1611 King James. And it's difficult to read. And not only the Bible, but any work of literature, you go back even 200, 300, 400 years, and you realize, boy, they were more sophisticated than we are. I think the media points to a fourth to fifth grade level when they write magazine articles and so on.
And this is so opposite of what evolutionists, or at least what Darwin originally proposed, was that languages began with grunts and hand gestures and over time developed more sophistication.
Right.
But like so many things in evolution, it's really turned on its head because it's really the opposite of what we see.
Yeah. And so Jerry Bergman points out, and he refers to, there's so many sources and references in this article, and he refers to quite a few, you know, secular authorities, humanist, evolutionist, and he gives the dates they published going back over a period of decades right up until recently. And they point out it's generally widely recognized that written language doesn't go back tens of thousands of years. It goes back, and there are debates, you know, with the specificity, but goes back at most about 6,000 years. That's it. And it always fascinates me, although the secular world doesn't know how to process for the flood, it fascinates me that so much evidence goes back about 6,000 years or so.
Exactly. There's so many things that 6,000 years pops up in a lot of different, even in mitochondrial DNA, not to sidetrack too much, but when they did a study of that, they found that mitochondrial Eve would be about 6,000 years old.
Yeah.
And that's quoting directly from Science Magazine. Of course, the next sentence was, well, that can't be the case.
That can't be the case.
So many things, converge on that.
Yeah, first they assume millions of years, then probably hundreds of thousands of years, and then, well, maybe 20,000, maybe 10, maybe as few as 6,000 years ago, we all descended from the first Eve. And this is in evolution textbooks. So, but the Sumerian language, for example, in the area of Babylon in southern Iraq, around 4,000 years BC is when many of the secular anthropologists and linguist historians will say that language started to appear, written language. And when it did, Fred, it wasn't grunts.
It wasn't. It wasn't grunts and hand gestures and people driving, you know, riding their camel and just grunting and hand waving at people like some of us do in our car.
Yeah, that's right. And so extensive literature written, for example, in Sanskrit dates back way before any European language. And from the earliest known examples, linguists have determined that Sanskrit contains a complete system of declinations and conjugations. So a sophisticated language from the beginning of language. It's just like cities, like Jericho, and Abraham was born in Ur of the Chaldees. These are sophisticated cities, even though they're the first known cities in the world for the most part.
That's right. And he quoted an evolutionist that said that written language evolved so rapidly that no evidence of it exists today.
No evidence of its evolution exists. And this is from evolutionists. So written language, and just language in general, evolved so rapidly that there's no evidence of that evolution.
That's right. Yeah. In fact, he mentions Stephen Jay Gould came up with the accidental evolution view.
Yeah.
That language just suddenly appeared.
Well, Jerry Bergman points out that Professor Steven Pinker, you've heard of Steven Pinker at MIT, he is writing about Noam Chomsky, who's considered the world's best known linguist, and Stephen Jay Gould, the world's best known evolutionary theorist, and they have repeatedly suggested that language may not be part of natural selection. And Fred, this cracks me up. Just 10 days ago or so, there was an article in New Scientist saying Darwin's Tree of Life was wrong. Darwin was wrong about the Tree of Life. We've studied over 500,000 genes, and we know that there's evidence of horizontal transfer in maybe 80% of them. So Darwin thought all life could be traced back to original trunk of a tree and all the branches and the twigs and all. And with DNA, they thought, well, now we could prove that because we could look at the genetic similarities of all reptiles and all birds and all amphibians. And it turns out, no, you got an amphibian that looks like it has a chunk of mushroom in it. And there's so the tree of life, according to New Scientist, was wrong.
That's right. As were almost all, if not all, of Darwin's predictions. You know, when you formulate a theory, you're supposed to have predictions that are verifiable. Well, a lot of them have been checked and verified, and the predictions were not true. In fact, in this article, Darwin believed in what's called Lamarckism, and that's where you acquire traits genetically, and that's long been disproven. But he thought that was one of the ways that over time you acquired this trait of grunting and using hand gestures.
And it goes into your DNA, your
genetics. It goes into the DNA.
Like if a giraffe stretches his neck, his baby's going to be born with a longer neck, which is a Lamarckian fantasy. It's silly.
That's right.
It's cartoonish, but evolutionists still believe that kind of thing.
Yeah, there are some that believe it. Many have, in fact, Stephen Jay Gould is one that wrote extensively on that we got to, get this idea that seems to, make it into our textbooks every now and then. It's generally a refuted idea, but it is amazing how many evolutionists want to try to latch on to Lamarckism. Because it would be a fairly powerful mechanism for evolution. The problem is, evidence overwhelmingly says it doesn't happen. It's been refuted.
If you jump off your desk at work, you're a software engineer. If you jump off your desk every day and flap your arms every day.
Bob, have you seen me at work?
Assuming you don't get fired, Fred Williams, would you have kids that arms beginning to turn into wings?
Well, I probably would never have any kids because who would ever want to marry me?
Yeah, good point. Good point. Okay, so Noam Chomsky and Stephen Jay Gould, they're saying, look, we don't even think language has anything to do with natural selection. And that cracks me up because Darwin's theory of the tree of life, which was equal in importance to natural selection, is now considered dead by the evolutionist community.
That's
for
right.
the most it's... part. Language did not evolve by natural selection because it's unworkable.
What did they call this? They call it a hypothesis, the glorious accident hypothesis that really explains little, and it is based not on evidence but on lack of evidence. Now, Stephen Jay Gould's pretty good at that. He did the same thing because the fossil record doesn't show evolution. It does not show gradual change in the fossil record. Stephen Jay Gould came up with punctuated equilibrium.
Right, that an animal, a species, had an offspring, and it was a huge evolutionary leap forward.
In a small, isolated population, and so that's why we don't find it in the fossil record. So the fact that we don't find evidence for it is his evidence for his theory. I can quote Stephen Jay Gould using a falsification of his test to be finding, if you find gradualism in the fossil record, that refutes my punctuated equilibrium theory.
Right. So because there's no evidence in the fossil record, that's proof that evolution happened.
That's right, and the way that he describes it is short bursts and small populations that we never see in the fossil record.
The hopeful monster theory, punctuated equilibrium.
Yeah, it's a hopeful monster is a variation, but not quite the same.
Yeah, okay.
But if anything, hopeful monster is a lot like this one.
Hmm. Yeah.
This all, you know, basically...
Well, the glorious accident hypothesis explains very little, but it's based on a lack of evidence.
That's right.
So we're seeing a pattern here. So now, there is another scholar, Hayakawa, who concluded that before humans developed languages as we know them today, that our ancestors probably made, like the lower animals, cries expressive of fear, for example, and triumph, and that we can recognize a variety of such noises and conditions of which they are symptoms in our domestic animals. Gradually, such noises seem to have become more and more differentiated. Consciousness expanded. Grunts and gibberings became language. So that's what the evolutionists were assuming, but it turns out that there are huge problems with that idea.
Oh, yeah. One huge problem is there's absolutely no evidence for it.
No evidence for it. Then we have a problem with the theory is that alarm calls are not comparable to human words because they're genetically programmed.
That's right. We've learned that.
For example, that's like an example of a problem with that. Animals produce these sounds even if they're reared in isolation from other animals. Words in human language, Fred, words are totally different. You're not born with an innate vocabulary.
That's right. I mean, theirs is more due to, you know, for example, just some kind of automatic response to such stimuli as hunger or, you know, pain.
Fear. Right. Exactly. So those kinds of grunts that animals will express, even if they're not raised by other, say, have a puppy raised with no dogs, still knows when to yelp, when to bark, when to, you know, so it's fundamentally a different concept than language. Language is not like more sophisticated grunts.
Yeah. Well, a major debate among evolutionists centers on the question, was it the power of speech that caused the mind to develop, or was it the evolution of the mind, a critical influence in developing the power of speech?
Yeah. And what's interesting is so many evolutionists will argue that the large brain is what caused language to develop, for example. And that is so superficial and cartoon-like, because if you go to a college campus, say you go to Notre Dame, and you're in a physics class, and you got some of the linemen there, and you have an Oriental 20-year-old girl. Now, who has the bigger brain? Right? The linemen are going to have bigger heads, bigger brains, way more cc's of brain matter, but they're not going to be nearly as smart as the little Oriental gal. And there have been people with slivers of a brain. You and I have reported about the one guy who had a tumor, and through his whole life, his brain was only a sliver. It was so tiny, and yet he had full intellectual functionality. So the size of the brain, it's juvenile.
Absolutely. I liked, you know, Jerry Bergman in this article pointed out some really interesting things about just speech in general, that it requires for us humans, it requires a complex set of biological capabilities, including not only the mind that we just talked about, but also the nervous system, the entire oral nasal pharynx design, and many accessory structures such as our teeth, tongue, lips, nasal cavities, larynx, lungs, etc., nose.
Oh. Well, that's interesting. So it's not just this concept. It's not just a theoretical concept of language that has to evolve, but there are all these biological features. So it's not only the mind, it's the nervous system, your oral nasal pathway, your vocal cords, your teeth, tongue, lips, nose, navel cavities, lungs. This is fascinating, Fred, that it is a sophisticated, multidisciplinary engineering feat.
Irreducibly complex.
Irreducibly complex to enable human beings to have language. And it didn't start with grunts. Imagine the animal that was grunting, and he just had this enormous desire to use nouns and verbs and even prepositions, but he didn't have vocal cords. and he just couldn't express it. And so then 30,000 years later, that creature's dead. And the ones that are, you know, walking around on all fours, they've lost that desire anyway. It's just Pollyanna, make-believe, magic.
Well, like you said, it's a cartoon theory.
It's a cartoon theory. So let's continue. Now, this Jerry Bergman, Fred, could you tell us a little bit about this guy? He's the author of the article we're going through in Creation Research Society Quarterly. The article is Evolution and the Origin of Human Language.
Well, Jerry's a real prolific writer for creation, and he's got multiple degrees. He's got a PhD in biology, PhD in measurement and evaluation. You know, he's got, I don't know, several degrees. He's got all kinds of...
He's got half a dozen degrees, right?
Yes.
And including he has expertise in anthropology he's taught, and psychology, and he's an extraordinary guy.
Well, he's taught biology, genetics, chemistry, biochemistry, anthropology, just all kinds of different scientific disciplines.
Yeah, microbiology. So he's a brilliant guy, and I'm so thrilled he did this article on evolution.
And he's currently in the biology department at Northwest State College.
Okay. And I'm so thrilled he did this article on language, I should say. And so he's now quoting Scaruffi, S-C-A-R-U-F-F-I, who says that the real problem is not the evolution of modern languages from primitive languages. It is how non-linguistic animals evolved into a linguistic human being. So here's an evolutionist explaining the real problem, the bigger problem. It's the evolution of language from non-language, not the evolution of languages from pre-existing languages.
That's right. It's information coming from non-information, and information theory says that that's not possible. You have to have intelligence to develop a code, a language. You know, language is a code. It's a way to communicate syntax. Mm-hmm. It has semantics. It has apophonetics. I mean, you can get real technical, mm-hmm. but it's a code. It's a, you know.
It's a code. And you know what we tend to do? We tend to be lazy, take shortcuts, right? So we shorten words. Except some people put R's in words where they're not there. Like Washington. I never quite figured that out. And we're going to wash the car.
Well, my dad calls spaghetti paschetti.
Paschetti, okay.
But that didn't really shorten it. I guess that just butchered it.
Yeah, it butchered it. Let's go wash the clothes, W-A-R-S-H. I don't know where they get the R from.
Well, I don't know either. And, Bob, I'm one of those.
No way.
I am.
Fred, you've never done it on the air.
Well, I've never had to talk about washing anything. I've never had to talk about the Washington Redskins.
I'm glad your wife washes the clothes at your house so they're done when you get here. Anyway, it cracks me up, and these are regionalisms, right? So there are different dialects from all over the country and every language around the world, practically.
Is it sword or sword?
Sword.
Okay, see, I get that one wrong, too.
And, okay, so anyway, so Fred, people shorten words. Like instead of saying with, they drop off the H, and they say wit. Right? And I think they're talking about how smart they are all the time. Come with
me. For how funny they are.
So anyway, we tend to shorten words. I mean, universally, we see that all over the world. We shorten words. So how did they get so long to start with?
And again, this is the opposite. If evolution were true, you know, you would expect the languages to get more complex. But again, we de-evolve our languages.
We de-evolve. And measuring the complexity of a language is a very difficult thing to do. But we do know that ancient languages were very sophisticated.
Oh, absolutely.
So then there's another difference is that children usually require several years to learn a language. You have kids, Fred?
Yeah, two kids.
Two kids. When they were born, they knew English?
Not quite.
Not quite.
They used grunts and hand gestures.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they cry. And it's amazing how the mom could interpret the cry. Right? Mom knows when it's a hungry, feed me. She knows when I'm dirty, cry, please change me. When I'm bored, I want something to do. When I'm scared, it's amazing, really.
How come when I cry, my wife doesn't feed me?
She doesn't feed you. You're funny, Fred. All right. So children require years to learn a language, whereas animal species, they possess an innate set of oral responses that are very limited. And animals rely on a single system of communication, whereas humans have more than 7,000 different languages that we are now aware of, from Swahili to Hindi to everything.
Yeah, and it reminds me of an article that just appeared this week about how chimpanzees as infants are farther developed than humans as infants. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing that, you know, the stretch the evolutionists will go to try to validate their theory. And it was funny, one of the comments, you know how they allow a blog comment to these articles, somebody said, well, you know, a chimpanzee is smarter than someone in third grade. Yeah, an adult chimpanzee is smarter. You know, I thought, you know, there's a grain of truth to that if that third grade person is in a public school.
Oh, man. That hurts, Red.
But, you know, it's funny because I had someone tell me that in a debate once, too, that chimpanzees.
A chimpanzee is smarter than a third grader. And so here's how I would say it. If maybe smarter than a public school teacher who would repeat that, I mean, there's evidence right there that a chimp is smarter than an evolutionist. If they think a chimp is smarter than a third grade little boy or girl.
Yep, good point.
I mean, third graders could do square roots, for example. And chimps, we got to hand it to them. They do write dictionaries, right? They write dictionaries. They build suspension bridges, chimps.
Well, they did that study where they put a bunch of chimps in a room and gave them a typewriter, you know, to try to prove Hawkins' theory that if you had a million monkeys, they could type out one of Shakespeare's sonnets.
Right.
And all they did was produce a rambling bunch of S's on the paper, and they defecated on the computer. Right. And it was funny, the conclusion of the article was, well, maybe this research money would have been better spent elsewhere.
Yeah, Dawkins, he said, would the chimps write, methinks it is a weasel? And that they never quite got it out. It's just absurd. And he wrote a computer program that supposedly in the Blind Watchmaker that supposedly showed how evolution could happen so rapidly. It was so immature and absurd.
Oh, and it was phony. It had the target from the very beginning. It had 100% chance to succeed.
And at the time when I read that, I had already been a software engineer for McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company on the Apache helicopter in their simulation department. And I knew a simulator would do what you wanted to do. He writes a simulator for evolution. And lo and behold, evolution works every time, usually in less than a minute. So Richard Dawkins, he's funny in the movie Expelled with Ben Stein. Fred, we're out of time. I'm hoping we could do a sequel and finish our discussion of the evolution of language.
Yeah, there's so much to talk about. It's so interesting.
That would be great. So if we can do that, thank you. And I'd like to close reminding people about our telethon. Please, if you could help Bob and Yurt Live continue to broadcast for another year, call us 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. And our website is kgov.com. You could go to our website, click on our store. You could make a donation, or you could buy one of our materials or subscribe to our monthly Bible study albums, sermons, classic BEL televised classics, or our topical DVDs. So we could use your help. Please help us. Thank you, Fred Williams. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, and we'll be back. And Maranatha, what a great school. Maranatha.